because nobody is ever satisfied with just one.
Left for McNabb, bottom of the circle. From the corner, he's saucered in front. Stone scores! Flips it in out of midair on a centering pass by McNabb.
We're back with another helping of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
5 seconds to go. Faber, another shot blocked on the outside. 2-1 goes across the slot, and the game is over. Vegas survives and marches on to the second round.
Streaming at lvsportsnetwork.com and live from the Richard Harris Law Firm studios, it's Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Let's get into it. It's the VGK Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas, 702-876-1340. I want to know your best reason why the Florida Panthers didn't touch the trophy this year. and I want them to be funny. Like, give me your best out-of-this-world goofy explanation why the Florida Panthers did not touch the trophy. And they're the defending champions.
Sure.
So they can just, like, lean right into it right now because they've got all the swagger. So 702-876-1340, text us and let us know your best explanation.
I think I know what the actual explanation is, but we don't need to get into that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a funny explanation either, like, other than, you know, Brad Marchand told them not to, maybe?
P.A. Parento, I heard, told them, do not touch the trophy. Or maybe it was Brandon Dominski, I don't know.
Okay, all right. I think it's ridiculous to not touch the trophy. Like, just touch it. Just enjoy it. Just have fun. It's
fine. One of the greatest goals I ever saw in the Stanley Cup playoffs was scored by Mike Krushelnicki, L.A. against Calgary, back in 1990.
Okay.
And he hit it, and it went up and over Mike Vernon. It was the coolest thing. And Krushelnicki, like, scored from his butt, was lying on his back when the puck went in.
Yeah.
And if you're going to tell me that somebody can score like that, like Crusher did, mm-hmm. and yet somehow the vibes of the game are going to get in the way of whether or not you actually go on and win because you touched a trophy. I don't know, but give me your example. Give me your take. 702-876-1340.
All right, we got a good one from Stephanie. She says the Panthers were afraid that Marchand was going to lick it and didn't want to get fined by the league.
That's a great. Was that Stephanie said that?
Yep, Stephanie.
That's
right,
quick.
On the money. Yeah, oh,
good,
yeah.
Good job.
For sure.
On that. Now, they have an advantage. The Eastern Conference, I will say, has a definitive advantage in this situation of whether or not you touch the trophy or not after the conference final. Because the Eastern Conference, the Prince of Wales trophy, it's just a trophy.
Yeah.
The Western Conference trophy presented to the Western Conference champion is a bowl. It's the Clarence Campbell Bowl. Like, there's a bowl, but it's got a lid on it.
Right.
And I remember Trevor Linden in 1994. It was Brian Burke that presented the trophy. And Trevor was so excited because Vancouver was supposed to come out of the West that year. And he held up the trophy, and off went the bowl, the lid. Like, it went flying. And he looked around and went, oh, okay. Like, that was exuberance. If you want to see somebody lean into touching the trophy, go back and look at that 1994 presentation between Brian Burke and Trevor Linden of the Vancouver Canucks. Because he lifted it with such vigor that the top went flying off. He had no idea that there was a lid on that thing that wasn't permanently attached.
Yeah, I you're right. There is a bit of an advantage for the Eastern Conference because, you know, the Prince of Wales trophy, it's got, like, the hockey sticks coming down the side, and it's just a trophy. You don't have to worry about anything falling off. But
do you remember Sandy McCarthy at all?
But, no.
Like, strong, tough player.
No.
Really, like could play a little bit, but more known for really control, keeping people in line.
You know, Sandy McCarthy.
We need Sandy McCarthy to stand off to the side and point to the leadership group and say, "You're touching that thing. Pick that thing up." You should have to accept the trophy from Bill Daly in order to go to the Stanley Cup final. If you do not pick up the trophy, or you're at all disrespectful to the trophy, you don't get to go to the final. The other team, even if you sweat the other team, they get to go instead. But Sandy McCarthy standing there going, just looking at them going, "Hey, pick it up, touch it, let's go." And it's, and here's the other thing. It's not even like it's the leadership group that goes up and accepts the trophy from Bill Daly. Mm-hmm. It's just the whole team goes up, gets the picture taken, and then they scatter.
Sure.
And then 10 minutes later, everybody's like, "Oh, do we take the trophy with us? Because somebody's going to..." And then they send a member of the equipment staff. Very important people. They've got better things to do than to be trying to figure out how to get the trophy back in the trophy case without touching it. They send them back, and they have to wheel that thing onto the airplane.
All right. I think you're on to something. The NHL mandates you have to pick up the trophy.
Yes.
The NHL mandates that if you win a conference championship, if you win your conference, if you're going to the Stanley Cup final, you must, in your picture, take ownership of the trophy.
Yeah, there's an actual presentation, not a picture with it. Now, Florida does a great job. Like, they get everybody in the picture. Like, it's 85 feet wide, board to board, wall to wall, across the rink. There's so many people in that picture. But nobody's touching the trophy.
What do you do if somebody just, like, trips over a wire and accidentally touches the trophy? Like, what do you do then if you're the Florida Panthers?
Maybe they just go, "Well, we touched it.
Well,
we're not going to do it.
The hockey gods willed it to be.
Yeah.
So we'll just touch it. We'll lean into it." This entire thing doesn't even need to be a thing if everyone just accepted the trophy. Like, there would be no narrative surrounding the touching of the trophy and what it means for you and the superstitions that follow in the Stanley Cup final if it was just, "Okay, you win the Western or Eastern Conference, you go up, you accept your trophy, you take it back with you, and that's just what you do."
This idea that when Los Angeles went to the final in 93, I bring back all these old memories. Yeah. They beat Toronto in an epic series, and they won the clinching game at Maple Leaf Gardens. Here's an aside story. No, I'll tell the first story first. There was champagne. There was everything. In that room, Wayne Gretzky led Los Angeles to the championship series, in which they eventually lost to Montreal. But everybody got a picture with it. Like it was like the Stanley Cup, and I appreciated that. I thought it was cool the way they did that. That was unique, and I don't know whether it's been celebrated like that since then. But that was a very emotional series for the Los Angeles Kings, and for more reason, like Wayne Gretzky, high stick, Doug Gilmour, it wasn't called by Carey Fraser. It's still talked about in Canada to this day, the missed high stick. But the greatest story out of that was Mike Myers, you know, the actor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
I'm aware. Love Guru. Very good. Very good movie.
Yeah, a few of my buddies were in that movie.
I'm kidding. It was not.
A few of my buddies were in that movie, and they didn't appreciate being the extras in that.
probably killed their careers.
No, they were just extras. It wasn't. Anyway, so Mike Myers he's Hollywood, like he's man that can get anything. He can't get into that last game at Maple Leaf Gardens.
Really? Wow.
So he reaches out to Wayne, who's playing for the Los Angeles Kings. Wayne, yeah. I need to get in. So Wayne pulls strings and gets Mike Myers a couple of tickets right on the glass. And out come the players for opening faceoff for the anthems, skating around the ice. And Mike's seats are down in the L.A. zone. Mm-hmm. And what does Wayne see as he's skating around? Mike Myers, mm-hmm. right in the glass.
Yep.
In a Toronto Maple Leaf sweater.
Yep.
Big Maple Leaf fan. But like it's kind of offside when you ask somebody for tickets and they're on one team and they get you the tickets and you show up wearing gears or jerseys of the other team. So it didn't go over very well with Wayne. Ends up scoring a hat trick in game 7.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether it was the hat trick goal or it was a second goal, but Wayne scores and he ends up on the glass and he hammers the glass with a stick, that silver Easton stick. And I've never talked to Wayne about this, but I'll have to next time I cross paths with him.
Yeah.
The urban legend is that he was slashing the glass right where Mike Myers was. Like, take that. you jerk.
That's awesome.
You shouldn't be able to do that. But they celebrated the Stanley Cup, or sorry, the Western Conference title big time. Now, like Mike York, he missed it. He played for the Oilers in 04. He missed out on winning because he was with the New York Islanders by the time they got to the Stanley Cup final in 06. I wonder if a guy like Mike York, who played for several different teams, whether he would have touched it. If you go back through it, I wonder if some of these guys regret getting caught up in the superstition of it.
Well, I think that's the big question kind of moving forward is like when you are in this moment or in this spot and you passed up a moment to celebrate an achievement, an accomplishment because you were looking toward the next one. Do you have regrets about that? Like, listen, if it were me, if I were in this position, I'm touching the trophy all day long. I'm celebrating the trophy all day long. I'm leaning into it.
No, but
it's an accomplishment.
No, but are you doing it even though your teammates aren't? Are you sneaking around after everybody leaves?
Yeah,
are you
running
back onto the ice going, woohoo?
If I'm the only guy that wants to celebrate an achievement, I guess I'll find a way, right? Like if the entire team is sitting there saying, yeah, we're not touching it, okay, fine, whatever. Like,
yeah, I'm not touching it if there's the teams agreed, the leadership groups agreed.
Yeah, for sure.
We're not doing it. I'm not going to be that guy.
But if I'm left to my own devices, or if it was like lukewarm, like yeah, whatever, we can touch it, we cannot touch it, I'm lobbying to touch the thing. Like I am lobbying to celebrate the accomplishment because it matters. It does, and like you know, again, like I keep bringing it back to the fan aspect of this. Like every year, only one fan base is going to be ultimately happy. But if you can have these different mile markers where you can really celebrate success, because it is a success to get to the Stanley Cup final. It is a success to get to the Western Conference final or the Eastern Conference final. Like those things don't happen every year for every franchise. So you should be celebrating them as much as possible when you get there. And if you just lean into the trophy aspect of it, fans would have more reason to be understanding of the accomplishment that their team actually was able to celebrate.
So last year, mm-hmm. Edmonton gets to the Stanley Cup. They lose, mm-hmm. but they do end up they have the full year reign of Western Conference champions and winners of the Clarence Campbell Bowl. Do you think at any point during the offseason, And I don't know the answer to this. I have a pretty good guess. Mm-hmm. But at any point, is there like, come down to Rexall Drugs, partner of the Edmonton Oilers, and get your picture taken with the Clarence Campbell Bowl. Or a there's going to be a meet and greet with a couple of members of the Oilers organization, and the Clarence Campbell Bowl will be around. Anything, like you do at times with the Stanley Cup.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I don't.
It just goes back to the Hall of Fame.
Sure.
And stays there. So whoever loses the final never really even gets any enjoyment out of winning that trophy at all.
Because the trophies aren't seen as an accomplishment. That's the whole crux of the argument, right? Like most teams,
but even don't afterwards, view them. You go, okay, we did something pretty cool there. We got to the Stanley Cup final.
Well, I think individual players probably look back on it and recognize the achievement over the course of years or time that passes. But like, if you normalized, this is really cool, this is a big accomplishment, it matters, it means something, by, you know, not sticking your nose up and not touching the trophy for 15, 20, 25, 30 years. If this is celebrated on the ice in a not over-the-top way, but...
No, they should
somewhat
carry it around.
Similarly to this.
It's good practice for the order that you go for winning the Stanley Cup.
We'd
have a better idea of what order is going to happen, because that's also a big thing when the season ends. What order? Who's getting the cup first after the captain?
My point is, if you celebrate it like it is a big deal, if you celebrate it by enjoying the moment on the ice and not just posing for a picture, scattering off, and never, ever speaking of the trophy again. And I'm not talking about the Florida Panthers. I'm talking about hockey over the last 25, 30, 35 years. If you celebrate it as something to be proud of and an accomplishment to enjoy, then maybe in the offseason you do have that. Maybe once the sting of losing wears off, you have something like that to tangibly look at and say, you know what? I know it sucks to lose in the Stanley Cup final, but this season was a success for multiple reasons, and here's one of them.
Florida against Edmonton, rematch.
Mm-hmm.
Who wins?
Oh, man,
Goaltending, Florida has the edge.
Yeah, well...
As well as Skinner's playing right now.
Listen, you're right, but this is two series in a row now. And, I mean, you could even make the argument against L.A., but I'm just going to take recency bias. The Vegas Golden Knights had the edge in goaltending, and so did the Dallas Stars. And in the end, it didn't really matter. It didn't mean
much. You know what's funny
is
Steve Alliquette, my buddy from Clearsight Analytics and New York Ranger, he didn't think that at all. He was down on Jake Oettinger from the time that the matchups were set going into the Stanley Cup playoffs. He was not high on Jake Oettinger, and we had him on 100% Hockey, and I was like, whoa, he was strong about it. Mm-hmm. And the first two rounds, like, okay, that's Valley missed it a little bit. Ends up he's right in the money when it came to what was a weakness for the Dallas Stars. But you got a guy that's won two Vezinas, not just gone to three straight finals, but Sergei Bobrovsky's won two Vezinas. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer against Stuart Skinner, who in back-to-back years has had to regain his net in two different ways. So goaltending goes towards the Florida Panthers. The blue line, I will give the edge to the Florida Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
And the addition of Seth Jones, it is even tilting it more so. Although Matthias Ekholm being getting a game in is huge before the Stanley Cup
for sure.
Final. Up front, two best players in the world versus a really good core. Hard not to think that Connor McDavid, a group led by he and Leon Draisaitl, wouldn't have the check mark there. So I'll give it to them, even though Florida has a wonderfully talented and deep physical experience group.
Yeah, I like the forward core of the Panthers a lot, but I'm not going against McDavid and Draisaitl. I'm not doing it because I still think that there's something more that we're going to get out of those two players in particular, and they've been very good. They're tops again in playoff scoring, 1-2 McDavid and Draisaitl, and I think they've got another gear, and I think they'll get to it in this final. Even though I love the depth and the balance of the Florida Panthers, I love how mean they are. I love how they play the game. I'll go forward core edge to Edmonton. I'm with you on the defensive side of things. I think the Panthers just have a better, more structured, better suited defense for this series. And yeah, I mean, listen, I know I was quick to point out, like, okay, well, the Oilers were the team that we kept saying, they don't have the advantage in goal. They don't have the advantage in goal. They really don't in this series. Sergei Bobrovsky can steal a series for you. He's done it before. So edge there to the Florida Panthers. With all that being said, you ask me who I think wins. I think the Edmonton Oilers win this series.
No Zach Hyman. Broken wrist, he's out.
Yeah.
Everybody else is pretty healthy, knowing that everybody's also banged up. But
sure.
Everybody's able to go here. Yeah. The Florida Panthers got their guys back at the end of the series. And the Edmonton Oilers welcome Matthias Ekholm to the lineup at the end of the Dallas Stars series. So I think it's really cool that there's no real glaring absences in this series. You think Edmonton does it?
I do. And this is more kind of a feeling or a vibe, I guess, because they've been incredibly efficient over the course of this run, and they have had stumbles for sure. They have had moments where they have needed to respond. You look at the LA series, that was probably the biggest factor for the Edmonton Oilers, which is kind of getting and finding their footing there, navigating the Stuart Skinner, Cal Pickard situation, finding a way against the Golden Knights when, you know, you didn't get those dominant performances from McDavid and Draisaitl, but you didn't need them. And then, you know, Dallas, like, they lose themselves for 20 minutes in game one, and they allow 5 goals in a period, and then they shut it down the rest of the way. Like, there is an ability with this Oilers team, a resilience with this Oilers team, where when they get pushed, they push back, similar to what we've seen out of Florida. And I just think when you are a player as driven as McDavid, as driven as Draisaitl, when you get there and you lose it, you're going to do everything you can to win it. And if I don't look at hockey as a game where one person can make the biggest difference in the world, because it's such a team sport. But if that person's Connor McDavid and he's driven more than he's ever been driven in his life, I have a hard time going against that grain and thinking he's not going to be able to get it done.
You're front runner.
I don't think McDavid will allow himself to lose the Stanley Cup. I just don't think he will.
Well, he may not have a choice.
I think he's good enough to make that choice. I think he's good enough to make that decision.
You sound like the old Saturday Night Live character. Is it Stewart? I'm good enough, and doggone it, people like me. What character was that?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Stuart Small?
No clue.
Google that for me, Chapman.
He's
the guy that looked in the mirror. You're smart enough.
Stuart Smalley,
yeah. And Dosh Garnet, people like me.
Did you just say Dosh Garnet?
I think he did.
Something like that.
I just said Dosh Garnet.
I just saw it with Michael Jordan, Stuart Smalley and Michael Jordan. Doing it way back when. This is Stuart Smalley. And that's what you sound like.
He says, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
People like me. It was such a good character way back when. I don't know. I don't know whether I can give you a definitive. I don't know who's going to win this. And from the sounds of it, the window doesn't either. The money doesn't. It opened up even last night. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether it's tilted today, but everybody that I've seen has gone 6 or 7, and it's like Oilers, Panthers. It goes back and forth. Nobody's calling for a 4 or 5er, mm-hmm. and which means it probably will go 4 or 5.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
How you get there? I didn't see Carolina losing as quickly as they did. I didn't see Dallas, certainly after such an emotional game one comeback, to fall and lose the next 4. So it can happen. It can come out of the blue. It is. There's no real momentum series to series. I do believe in series momentum, mm-hmm. but when you start a new round, I think that everything is very, very fresh. But I'm already feeling bad if the Oilers lose. And not I don't feel bad for the franchise.
Yeah.
I would feel bad for the players.
Sure.
To get to that stage back-to-back years and win 2 straight Stanley Cup final series. Mm-hmm. Like Marian Hossa. Remember he was bouncing around all over the place?
Yeah. 3 straight.
And he couldn't win?
Yeah.
Like, it was painful. And they joined the next team, just played, and wouldn't win. So yeah, wasn't he Detroit and
it
Pittsburgh?
Was okay. So he was on the Penguins in 2008.
Lost.
They lost to the Red Wings. Then he signed with the Red Wings in the offseason.
And lost.
And the Penguins beat the Red Wings. And then the following season, he signed with Chicago and won. So it
finally
was 3 straight consecutive Stanley Cup final appearances for Marian Hossa. He lost with the Penguins. Lost with the Red Wings and won with Chicago.
Just kidding. All the way back there.
Yeah.
And not winning. And then you start getting into,
what about Corey Perry?
Yeah, but he's already
Corey
won.
Perry, Corey, no, I know he's won, but my point is, he went with Dallas, they lose. Yeah. Went with Montreal, they lose. He went with Tampa the year that they lost. Like, he's been right there. And hasn't been. I know he won early in his career, but to be there this much, this late in your career, and to not be able to get it done, sucks.
Yeah. If Corey Perry walked into Studio 31 right now, I'd mm-hmm. have no trouble telling him the Dallas series you weren't going to win, and the Montreal series you weren't going to win. Like just getting there was an accomplishment with those teams. The losing with Tampa. That was a kick in the mm-hmm. cheek.
Yeah.
That sucked. And he last year was awkward, especially the way it happened. But they got down so much. We'll get into one-timers. News and notes from around the National Hockey League. We got 1 vote for Edmonton, and I can't tell you.
You're sitting this one out. You're not making a declarative statement. It's fine.
And it's not. I'm not sitting on the fence. I honestly don't know.
Yeah.
I would like to go Florida. If you told me I had to make a decision, I would go Florida, but only because you told me. Chapman, who do you take?
To be right about it.
Well, just to before we get to Chapman, if you're asking me what I want to happen, I want the Florida Panthers to win. But I just feel like it's going to be the Oilers this year. Go ahead, Chapman.
My sentiments are exactly that. Like, I would love to see Florida win again. We won't go down the rabbit hole of how much I enjoy watching them play. But Edmonton just seems like they are on a mission.
Okay, you can't take Edmonton against the best all-time 200-foot center, Sasha Barkov.
The greatest Finnish player in the history of the NHL.
After you said yesterday, you can't take the Edmonton Oilers.
I could think that the Oilers are a better team.
Nope.
I just
I don't even know why I brought you into this.
Why? What do you want me to say? You asked me my opinion. I think.
And you gave the wrong one based on your performance yesterday.
I personally think Florida is a better team, top to bottom. But Edmonton is just playing at a much higher level than I thought possible, and I don't even think we've seen the best of McDavid and Draisaitl yet.
A lot of feedback on yesterday's conversation regarding some of that stuff. A lot of feedback today.
About how you were wrong?
Yeah, people really intrigued and thought-provoking.
About how you were arguing something that Chapman didn't say?
Yeah, Joey Zamboni.
It was more about some of the awards.
Our buddy Joey Zamboni texted and says, you're not all saucy and sour about trophies today, are you?
Oh, you wait, Joey. You just wait.
Selkie. Say it three times, and saucy Darren appears.
Selkie. Beetlejuice. We'll be back with more right after this on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Carlson left corner, centered, one-timer, score!
It's time for One-Timers. A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery.
Stanley Cup final schedule has been released. Edmonton has home ice advantage this time around. It will open up on Wednesday. In Edmonton, Florida Panthers on the road for games 1 and 2. So they go Wednesday and Friday in Edmonton. The weekend off. That surprises me. The way the National Hockey League sets things up, that there's no weekend action. They will return to play for games 3 and 4 in Sunrise, Florida on Monday and Thursday. So a 2-day break between games 3 and 4.
Yeah.
In the same city. That's unusual, too.
It is unusual.
Then travel back to Edmonton for game 5 on Saturday. Game 6, if necessary, goes Tuesday. So a second 2-day break in the series. That one in Sunrise. And game 7, if required, like it was a year ago, will take place on Friday, June 20th. So if it goes the distance, there will be 3 breaks of 2 days in the Stanley Cup final. And you guys, I've told you before, in having covered many Stanley Cup championship series, Stanley Cup final series over the years at Sportsnet, where you don't have a dog in the fight, automatically cheer for whoever wins game 1. And then you hope it wraps up before you get into any of these multiple days off scenarios. Now, you're going to have one between games 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. But when you get into, like, from game 4 on and you've got a couple of those situations, boy, traveling between Sunrise and Edmonton is not easy. Like, there's no direct flights.
Sure.
There's no direct flights. So I don't think it's just because of travel, but it's advantageous for the media because you've got availabilities and you're trying to cover both sides, and it makes it a little more difficult. So you do need some of these multiple day breaks going through it. But it's game 1 on June 4th, and if necessary, game 7 on June 20th. It could wrap up as early as the second week of June.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's right around that June 12th, June 14th window if you're looking at 4 or 5 games. I personally don't feel like it's going to be a 4 or 5 game series, but there is potential there for it to wrap up second week of June, which I think that's kind of where people want it to be.
Oh yeah,
but you know, I think we're in for June 20th. I really do.
That's your playoff update, brought to you by Centennial Subaru. Be the boss at Centennial Subaru. Biggest controversy coming out of the conference finals ends up being the decision by the Dallas Stars and head coach Pete DeBoer to yank his number one goaltender, Jake Oettinger, early on, last night.
Yep.
Two shots, two goals. He did call a timeout. I thought he was using the goaltending change as a way to change things up and then was going to put Ottinger back in. But save his timeout. That was not the case. He called the timeout and took Ottinger out at the same time. Ottinger went straight to the room and was not pleased about things. And DeBoer stood by that move after the game. And, you know, I'm with him on it. Like, Ottinger, over 2 years, Oilers were his kryptonite. He couldn't find a way to get his team consistently in the game, and even the game that he won this year against Edmonton required some rather unique circumstances in the third period of that game. So Casey DeSmith, was he going to be the difference? Was he ever going to start a game in the series? I doubt it. But I didn't mind the early hook last night.
I think that he should have gone back to Ottinger. Like, go back to him at the start of the second period. You need your goaltender to beat the Edmonton Oilers. You do. You need him to beat the Edmonton Oilers, because the fact of the matter is, if you're the Dallas Stars with that team, you know that at some point in the future you're going to have to play and beat the Edmonton Oilers to get to where you want to go. And to pull your goaltender and then basically in the postgame point out that your goalie can't beat the Edmonton Oilers, it's going to do a wonders for his confidence moving forward. Like, I would have gone back to Ottinger. I would have let him battle through it. That would have been the way that I would have handled it.
You don't have time for him to battle through it.
They scored five goals in four games. Like, Jake Ottinger could have been
Superman.
You're
giving up
five
a game, and you got to at some point. You got to do something drastic. And
try scoring goals.
You can't control that as much as you can shake things up and send the team a message and get their attention that way. Smith hadn't given up a goal,
mm-hmm.
I probably would have put Ottinger back in. But then he'd given up a goal, and, like, you're going to do the double pull there, and then it just becomes really – it was muddy into the second period. And even when they got back into it, they would give up a goal right away. That was the really challenging part about what happened. But that'll be interesting to see.
Which is why you probably want your franchise goalie in there.
Well,
right? Like, listen, I'm not sitting here saying that Jake Ottinger was good in the series. But what I am saying is, when you are showing the pushback that the Dallas Stars finally came through with in game number 5, you probably want your guy in there to try to prevent some of those breakdowns, to try to prevent those moments where you can't get yourself fully back into the game. And I'm not saying that he would have done it either, but at least you give him an opportunity to do it.
Yeah. After two shots and there's two goals, not that they were necessarily his fault, but you need saves.
Did pulling Ottinger spark the team?
What's that?
Did pulling Ottinger spark the Dallas Stars?
No, but I thought it was way? There's not a lot of moves that he's got there. There's not, and if you're in game two, there's no way he takes Jake Ottinger out. And if you're in game three, there's no way he takes Jake Ottinger out. But after watching what happened in 1, 2, 3, 4, you got to do something drastic in that situation to turn things around. And it was an ugly situation. And if he didn't take him out and they get run out of the building,
mm-hmm.
which it's looking like it's going to happen after those two quick goals.
Sure.
That he's going to be asked after the game, did you think about taking him out, or why mm-hmm. didn't you take him out?
Right.
And I appreciate not leaving a move unplayed by the head coach. As somebody that's been taken out of enough games, I appreciate the move that was there. And,
yeah, I mean,
like, you're not winning a championship. And I like Casey DeSmith. I really do. I think Scott Wedgwood and Casey DeSmith are two of the best backups in the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
And funny enough, Wedgwood was in Dallas last year. But you're still not, like, you're not thinking we're going to go to a promised land with this guy. They needed a hope and a prayer last night, and they were hoping to find the same magic that they did in the third period of game one.
Sure, but when you the magic they needed was not from their goaltender. The magic that they needed was from the rest of their team. And if it wasn't Jason Robertson, it wasn't going in the back of the net for the Dallas Stars, and they had four shots on goal in the third period alone. Like,
I called the Jason Robertson thing earlier this week. You weren't on the show that day, but Chapman and I were bouncing around. I'm like, he's going on a heater here. Mm-hmm. It's what Robo does, and off he went. Now, a lot of good it did him.
Yeah, it didn't do anything.
Everybody else went quiet on him. I'll be curious to see what happened in Dallas.
Yeah.
Just there's not a lot that can happen, but there is a couple of significant pieces that can be altered or tweaked. And Jim Neal and Pete DeBoer, they've got some options ahead of them. Catching up with Chapman to wrap up the week on Fox Sports Las Vegas is next.
When the guy wouldn't stop talking, we had no choice but to give him his own segment. It's time for Catching Up with Chapman.
Oh, Christopher.
Hi, Darren. So this is probably something that only takes place in the brain of Chris Chapman, but you talked about the two trophies, right? The Prince of Wales Trophy and the Clarence Campbell Bowl. And both are named after people. Clarence Campbell was a former, I believe, president of the National Hockey League for many, many years.
You know how many commissioners there's been in the National Hockey League?
I do not.
One.
Oh. Gary Bettman.
Yep. Before that, it was always president.
Interesting. I did not know that. But the Prince of Wales Trophy is named, obviously, after the Prince of Wales.
How do you know that?
Well, because it's in the name. Silly. So here gets to the Chapmanism part. The Prince of Wales changes. There have been multiple Princes of Wales since the trophy was introduced back in the 1920s. Edward Charles, who is now the King of England and the current Prince of Wales, William. So while the name of the trophy does not change, the person who is the Prince of Wales actually does change, unlike the Clarence Campbell Bowl.
But there's always been, I believe, during the course of the NHL, there's always been a Prince of Wales.
Yes, it is something that continues.
Like, there hasn't been a time when there hasn't been that male heir to the throne.
Correct. Which would be interesting if there was ever a male heir to the throne.
You got me going on the Princes of Wales. Princes, and then I'm thinking, did you say princess?
No, princes, princes.
Prince of Waleses.
Was it the Spin Doctors, two princes? How did I sneak that in there?
Like, I've known the Prince of Wales trophy for my entire life.
But I bet you never thought about the fact
not a single second did that ever cross my mind.
Unbelievable.
So good on you. That's impressive.
I try.
Attaboy. Have a good weekend, guys.